Philip's face just inches from my own. He grew absolutely still. I could have sworn he was holding his breath, and I was reminded of that day in the library. How still he had been there, too, as if he was waiting for me to discover something within him. Philip drew in his breath as if he were going to say something, but he paused, and for the first time since I had met him, I saw uncertainty in his expression, like a wash over a painting, clouding his clear, confident look. It surprised me. I thought Philip was unfailingly confident. He looked away and said quietly, "Yes, you are." I sat back, feeling something new and intense buzzing inside of me. I didn't have a name to put on it. I just knew that it was unsettling. The silence between us stretched longer and longer until it lost its tension and became a part of the scene we were enjoying together. I felt no desire to break it. I set my sketchbook aside and leaned back on my hands. The afternoon heat settled over me like a blanket, and I felt drowsy and content sitting in the shade of the tree. Philip stretched out on the ground, his arm folded under his head. I felt jealous. I wished I wasn't a lady in a gown, or I could have done the same. Instead, I had to sit modestly, trying to make sure my ankles were covered. The heat was making me sleepier than I realized, and my eyelids became heavy. Philip glanced at me. "You look like you're about to fall asleep." "I am," I yawned. He stood up and shrugged out of his jacket, then folded it into a square and set it on the grass. "If you're going to have a nap outside, you may as well lie down and enjoy it." "I shouldn't," I said, looking at the tempting pillow he had made out of his jacket. "I'm sure it's breaking one of the rules of being ladylike." "I won't tell anyone," he said, with a perfectly polite smile, not teasing or mischievous. I glanced over my shoulder. The groom was resting in the shade of another tree on the other side of the knoll, with his back to us. It was too tempting to resist. I managed to keep my skirt tucked modestly in place while lying down. Philip's jacket smelled like the woods on a summer day, mixed with some other pleasant masculine scent, and made a very nice pillow. I curled onto my side, and Philip stretched out next to me, at what I thought was a proper distance, his arm under his head, looking out at the view. The warm silence settled into me, soothing me to my bones. I think I was smiling when I fell asleep. I couldn't have slept very long. I awoke to a soft breeze across my skin and the tickle of grass along my arm. I opened my eyes and looked straight into Philip's. He was facing me, reclined on his elbow, and watching me with a thoughtful expression. I wondered how long he had been watching me like that. A drowsy thought flitted through my mind that I liked seeing him in his shirt and waistcoat. He seemed more casual, more familiar, more like how I thought of him, comfortable.
"How was your nap?" he asked.
"Very nice, thank you," I smiled contentedly. A breeze blew under the tree, teasing a lock of my hair loose, so that it escaped its twist and flew across my face. Before I could move, Philip caught the lock of hair and tucked it behind my ear, his fingers brushing my cheek and neck in a surprisingly intimate gesture. My heart skittered at his touch, a blush rising to my cheeks. His gaze grew into something I had never seen before, more than warm, different than serious. It was intimate, gentle, and significant. Nobody had ever looked at me like that before. I felt completely unnerved and deeply confused, both by Philip's actions and by my reaction to him. I was also keenly aware of the very inappropriate position I was in, lying down less than an arm's length away from a man. What had seemed harmless and innocent a moment before now felt almost scandalous. I sat up and frowned at the grass, growing more self-conscious by the second. I could feel Philip's gaze on my face as he sat up next to me, and I blushed hotter with the awkwardness of the moment. I didn't know what to say or do. I was beyond inept. This was excruciating. Suddenly, Philip said in a light tone, "You snore, you know." I looked up sharply and gasped, "I do not."
"You do."
He had that familiar teasing glint in his eyes. "I have never been told that I snore. I am sure you are mistaken." He grinned.
"You snore like a big, fat man." A laugh burst from me. I was sure he was lying.
"Stop it," I said, swatting at his shoulder. "You are so inappropriate. What gentleman tells a lady that she snores?"
"What lady falls asleep in a gentleman's presence?"
He lifted an eyebrow and looked at me as if I had done something scandalous. I felt my blush flare up again. "You said it was all right," I said defensively. He chuckled.
"No, I didn't. I said I wouldn't tell anyone."
I pressed my lips together to keep myself from smiling and shot him a dark look. He grinned wickedly. To my astonishment, I suddenly had the strongest urge to kiss those grinning lips, wicked or not. I looked down, flustered, and so surprised with myself that I couldn't gather my wits. I had never wanted to kiss a man before, at least not a specific man. I picked up Philip's jacket, stood, and brushed the grass off of it. "Thank you for the pillow," I said politely, handing it to him as he stood.
"You are welcome to borrow my pillow any time," he said,
with such a rakish glint in his eyes that I thought I should slap him for it. Instead, I glared at him, hands on hips. "Philip Wyndham, that is the most inappropriate thing I have ever heard. And if your mother were here, she would give you the scolding of your life. In fact, I have half a mind to go tell her what an atrocious, incorrigible, scandalous tease she has raised." He didn't look the least bit chagrined. He just smiled and said,
"If my mother were here, I wouldn't have said it. That was for your ears only."
And then he winked. I stared at him in disbelief. There was no stopping him. He had no limits to how far he would go with his outrageous flirting. Ugh! I clenched my fists and stomped my foot in frustration. His head tilted to one side, his lips twitched.
"Did you just stomp your foot?"
I pressed my lips together tightly, but the amusement in his eyes was too much. A little laugh escaped me. And then his shoulders were shaking, and suddenly we were both laughing like we had that first night at the inn. I laughed until my throat ached.
"Well, I'm glad to see you took my advice about the stomping," he chuckled, "although it really didn't help."
"You are the most infuriating man I have ever known," I told him, and I meant it. But he just smiled. "Of course. Nothing penetrated him when he was in this mood."
"You are so enchanting when you insult me," he said.
I abruptly turned and walked to the horses. What a scandalous, inappropriate, odious flirt! He would never leave me alone. He would never just be my friend. He always had to make me feel childish and awkward with his outrageous flirting. I felt churned up inside and embarrassed for a lot of reasons, not the least of which was the fact that I had thought about kissing that scandalous, inappropriate, odious flirt. Well, I would just ride off and show him what a good seat I had, and that I didn't need his company or his flirting or his horrid teasing. I waved off the groom as he hurried toward me. I did not need any man's assistance. I untied Meg and then looked at the stirrups. I had never mounted her without a mounting block, and I could see immediately that I wouldn't be able to. The lowest stirrup hung level with my shoulders. I heard Philip's approach and turned reluctantly to him, although I didn't look at his face. His cravat was closer to my eye level and was a good substitute when I didn't want to meet his eyes. "It looks like I'll need a leg up," I muttered, mad that I couldn't ride off dramatically on my own like I had planned. He stepped right up to me, but instead of cupping his hands into a step for me, he wrapped his hands around my waist. I caught my breath and looked up at him, surprised by how my heart thumped around in my chest and how my skin tingled under his strong hands. His eyes were such a deep blue, almost navy. He looked at me as softly as a caress.
"I'll help you up if you'll forgive me for my horrid teasing."
He spoke in a soft voice, a regretful twist to his smile.
"It's no excuse, but I have always found it extremely difficult to behave as I ought to when I'm with you, Marianne."
I felt oddly breathless, and suddenly all of my anger drained from me, leaving me lightheaded. "Are you saying I bring out the worst in you?" I asked, smiling, ready to be charmed. He took a breath, held it, and I could almost see the words hanging off the edge of his lips. But then, for the second time today, I saw a flash of uncertainty in his eyes. When he released his breath, it sounded like a sigh.
"Something like that," he murmured.
I wondered what he had really wanted to say. Then he lifted me as easily as if I were a small child and set me gently on my saddle. I was so unnerved by the interaction that I sat in a daze for a minute before realizing that he had mounted his horse and was waiting for me. When I caught up with him, he said,
"Don't worry, I won't tell anyone that you snore."
Then he grinned at me, and I couldn't help myself. I laughed. I knew I shouldn't. I knew it would just encourage him to behave in his atrocious way in the future. But the laugh bubbled out of me before I could stop myself. He looked very satisfied and challenged me to a race. He won, of course. He always won. Chapter 13. To make good on my resolution to learn from other elegant ladies, I joined Lady Caroline in the drawing room the next morning, even though it went against my natural inclinations. I longed for a walk through the woods, or a ride, anything but being confined in this chair and this room and the polite conversation of polite women. But this sacrifice was one of the changes I was making in order to improve myself. Lady Caroline looked pleased when I joined her. The third visitors of the day were Mrs. Fairhurst and her daughter, Miss Grace, who lived just 3 miles away. Mrs. Fairhurst entered the room grandly, seeming to dominate the elegant apartment with her bold, sweeping gaze and the lofty tilt of her head. I recognized her sort from other ladies I had met in Bath. She was well-dressed, but looked as if she were trying too hard to appear elegant. Her lace was a bit too elaborate, her laugh a bit too shrill, her bearing a bit too dignified. She was moving up in the world, probably the daughter of a wealthy tradesman. I knew I wouldn't like her as soon as she entered the room. Miss Grace looked just like her name. She was tall and willowy, with a long neck, rich brown curls, and large green eyes. She walked sedately with a dignified air and greeted me in a soft, cultured voice without any undue emotion. Noting her creamy white skin, I was certain she never went outside without a bonnet, something which I had been guilty of many times. I was also fairly certain she was not the type to snort when she laughed. Here was a clearly wealthy, elegant, accomplished young lady, the very epitome of what my grandmother would have me become, and I was struck with a pang of inferiority. Mrs. Fairhurst turned her attention to me as Lady Caroline served tea.
"Have you travelled much, Miss Daventry?" she asked, raising her eyebrows at me over her teacup.
"No, not much."
"Have you ever been to London?"
"No," I answered, feeling as if a trap were being set for me.
She looked shocked in an exaggerated way, opening her eyes wide while looking at Miss Grace, who sat next to me.
Never been to London? What a pity. You must have heard how admired Grace was last season. She was one of the most courted ladies in town, was she not, Lady Caroline?
Lady Caroline smiled politely.
Was she?
Why, of course she was. You must remember.
Where is Sir Philip?
He can tell you. He danced with Grace several times himself, did he not?
Grace nodded, and Mrs. Fairhurst went on, but I stopped paying attention. My mind had caught on one word, and I couldn't move my thoughts beyond it. She had called him Sir Philip, but he was not the eldest son. Charles was. Charles had the title, not Philip. Why did Lady Caroline not correct her? Mrs. Fairhurst laughed through her nose.
Miss Daventry, I feel so sorry for you, having never been to London. You really must see a little more of the world if you hope to become the sort of interesting lady that would attract a husband.
I knew I wouldn't like this woman. I debated what I could say to her to put her in her place, and then decided that I probably couldn't say anything since she was Lady Caroline's guest. So I lowered my eyes, took a sip of my bitter tea, and wondered what in the world she had meant by calling him Sir Philip. Lady Caroline cleared her throat.
Mrs. Fairhurst, I have heard you are making some improvements on your house.
Oh, yes, we certainly are. She began reciting a loud, detailed description of her estate, while Lady Caroline listened with an air of polite forbearance. Under the cover of her mother's talking, Miss Grace turned to me. Her eyes were kind, and she smiled hesitantly. I was looking forward to meeting you. I hope we can be friends. I nearly choked on my tea. I studied her before answering, but found nothing but innocence in her eyes. I should like that, I said. I took a deep breath. Why was it so stuffy in here? Had someone lit the fire? I cleared my throat. I heard your mother refer to Sir Philip, but is she not mistaken? Isn't Sir Charles the eldest? She looked surprised. Well, yes, of course. But he died 5 years ago.
Chapter 14. My thoughts reeled. I felt wholly incapable of comprehending what had just been revealed to me. Miss Grace glanced at her mother, who was still talking loudly enough to drown out our conversation.
"Tell me, how do you like it here?" she asked in a low voice.
I forced myself to focus on the elegant young lady next to me. I would think of Philip later.
"I like it very well," I said in a faint voice.
She lowered her voice even further.
"I don't think I could be entirely comfortable here."
That caught my attention.
"Oh?"
"You must know by now what an incorrigible flirt Sir Philip is. He can hardly pass by a lady without paying her a compliment. I know I should not take him seriously, but his manners are so charming that it's easy to feel flattered. Don't you agree?"
I knew what she was referring to. He was a flirt. I had known that all along. I nodded weakly.
"My mother says he leaves a trail of blushes in his wake everywhere he goes," she whispered,
"as well as a trail of broken hearts.
Of course, he is the most sought-after bachelor in town every season."
I could understand why. He had been attractive before I knew about the title and the estate and the wealth. Now it made perfect sense to me why he would be the catch of the season.
"I haven't been hurt by him," Miss Grace continued, "but I think it has become something of a game with him to see how many ladies he can make fall in love with him. He is a collector of hearts, hearts he has no interest in keeping."
She glanced down at her tea.
"And, of course, so many of them come here hoping to ensnare him. I think for many of them it is just ambition that motivates them."
She let her voice trail off and looked up at me expectantly. My brow furrowed as I realized what she was hinting at. Did she think that I had come here with that intent?
I must set your mind at ease, I said. Lady Caroline invited me, and I had never heard of Sir Philip before I arrived. In fact, I wanted to add, I had never heard of him before today.
Of course you didn't. She rested her hand lightly on my arm. I only wanted to warn you right away, because I would hate to see you leave broken-hearted like all the rest. I suddenly saw through her act. Her mother, moving up in the world, would, of course, want her daughter to have a title. She must have seen me as a threat and thought to warn me off. But I knew something they didn't. I knew that Cecily had her heart set on Philip. If the Fairhursts thought I was a threat, they would have a conniption when they met Cecily, who was at least twice as beautiful as I was, and much more elegant. She would come with her charm and her beauty and her accomplishments, and Philip would fall madly in love with her. I had no doubt about it. Miss Grace did not stand a chance. Nobody stood a chance.
Thank you for the warning, I said, remembering to whisper. But I am in no danger of having my heart broken by Sir Philip. In fact, I can safely promise you that I will never take him seriously. My heart felt as hard as ice as I said the words. Miss Grace smiled.
I am relieved to hear it. I thought those might have been the first sincere words she had spoken to me.
She looked at her mother, who had paused during her loud one-sided conversation. Perhaps this was the signal that her goal had been accomplished, because at her look Mrs. Fairhurst turned to Lady Caroline.
Well, what a delightful visit this has been! But now we must be off. I dare say we shall see you all soon enough.
The two women stood and took their leave. Miss Grace, with tremendous poise. Mrs. Fairhurst, with tremendous condescension. I walked to the window and watched them leave, reflecting that they had each, in their own way, stripped some of the happiness from my current state. I hated them both for it. Lady Caroline came to stand beside me.
I hope you haven't let Mrs. Fairhurst upset you.
I shook my head. The insults meant practically nothing compared to what Miss Grace had said. But why Miss Grace's revelation should cut up my peace so much was a mystery to me. I could not comprehend my own heart or my own mind, and all I wanted was some time alone to try to come to some understanding of myself.
Have you been enjoying yourself here?
Her question echoed Miss Grace's. I forced myself to pull my thoughts away from the Fairhursts and what I had just learned. Giving Lady Caroline a quick smile, I answered,
I have. It's such a beautiful home, and I love the grounds.
Lady Caroline smiled kindly at me, and I sensed she somehow knew more about me than I guessed.
Did you know your mother visited here before you were born?
Now she had my complete attention. Did she? I never knew that. She nodded.
It was shortly after her visit that we grew apart. I've regretted that for years.
What happened? Did you quarrel? I had never asked my mother why the friends had grown apart.
I wish we had. That might have been amended.
No, it was something much more subtle, and something which I'm afraid I didn't understand until it was too late to do anything about it.
I had my hands full with babies, you see, and she went a long time hoping for a child before she had you and Cecily.
She sighed.
I think it was difficult for her to see my life, because it seemed like I had everything she wanted most.
I tried to remember my mother ever hinting at such a thing.
I never heard her say such a thing.
No, I don't imagine she did.
Her eyes grew soft with kindness and a touch of sadness. I stood silent for a moment, thinking about my mother wanting what Lady Caroline had.
She did a painting while she was here,
she said, pointing at the wall opposite us, where the painting of Edenbrook hung.
It is still one of my favorites. I caught my breath. I should have known. I admired it my first night here. I crossed the room and stared at the painting. Lady Caroline said something about needing to talk to the housekeeper. I nodded without pulling my gaze away from the painting and hardly heard the door close behind her. I should have recognized the style. My mother's touch was all over the scene. I ached with longing for her. The ache grew until it filled me to the brim. And then, suddenly, I couldn't stand to be inside another moment. The orchard awaited me with its quiet and stillness. I sat under a tree and thought about Miss Grace's revelation and what it meant to me. Obviously, it meant that Cecily was in love with Philip, not Charles. It was Philip she planned to marry. But how had I not known that Philip was the master of the house? I had been here for almost a week. Surely there had been some hint of it during that time. I stood and paced as I recalled several instances when it should have been obvious to me who Philip was. He had spent hours one morning meeting with the steward who helped manage the estate. Lady Caroline had asked him for his permission to hold a ball. I had probably even heard someone call him Sir Philip. Why had I not pieced the clues together? The orchard did not feel cozy and secure today. Gone was the serenity and comfort I usually found within its protective space. My pacing increased, but I was still filled with a restless energy that I could not exhaust. I asked myself many questions. Why had I not recognized Philip's identity? Why did this revelation upset me so? Why was my heart such a stranger to me? But no answers were forthcoming. In frustration, I plucked an apple from a branch above me and bit into it, but it was too tart to swallow. I spit it out and threw the apple at a nearby tree. I missed. A sudden urge swept through me, and I plucked another apple and threw it harder at the same tree. It hit the trunk with a satisfying smack. It felt so satisfying, in fact, that I had to do it again and again. Where such an urge came from, I couldn't say. I only knew I either had to throw these apples as hard as I could or risk facing some truth I didn't want to face. I hurled the apples harder and harder until my shoulder hurt and the ground around my target was littered with smashed fruit. When I finally stopped, the truth I had been trying to avoid laid as clearly before me as the mess of ruined apples. Edenbrook was ruined for me. Everything I had found here, all of the happiness I had discovered, and the pieces of myself, and the friendship, and the sense of belonging, was all ruined. My hands curled around nothing as I stared at the bruised apples at my feet. One tiny piece of information had changed everything. Philip was the eldest now. He had the title and the estate and the wealth. He was the one Cecily had set her heart on. And I never raced the same course as Cecily. Philip was like that beautiful doll from long ago. Cecily had claimed him first, and I would have to pretend that I never wanted him. It was not that I wanted to marry him myself. I had not considered such a thing. Well, except for that strange urge I had to kiss his wicked smile. But he had become a friend to me when I had no other, and a friend who seemed to know me well and accept me, and one in whom I could confide was a treasure, a priceless treasure. I hated the thought of giving that up. Resentment surged through me. And I was suddenly 6 years old again, hating Cecily for claiming that doll first. But Philip was so much more than a doll. He was... I stopped myself short. It did no good trying to define what Philip was to me. All that mattered was that he was not mine. I turned away from the orchard, restless with dissatisfaction. I wasn't hungry, and I didn't want company. What I wanted, in fact, was solitude with a purpose. Then I had the perfect idea. I ran to my room, grabbed the satchel with my painting supplies, and left the house without talking to anyone. I didn't even wait for a groom to saddle Meg, but did it myself. I couldn't stop until I reached the knoll. There I dismounted, turned until I found the same view my mother had painted, and sat on the grass under the shade of the tree. It was almost the same spot where Philip and I had sat yesterday. But everything was different now. Hours later, I set my brush down, rolled my shoulders, and stood back to study my watercolor with a critical eye. I had captured Edenbrook, the symmetry of the house, the bridge, the river, the orchard. All of that was in the background. In the foreground of the scene was the tree Philip and I had sat under on the knoll, and next to the tree stood a lone figure. Her back was to the viewer, and her hand rested on the tree as she looked down at Edenbrook. In a stroke of vanity, I had painted her hair hanging long down her back, and made it shimmer like honey. Even though her face was turned away, it was obvious from her posture that she ached with longing. This was exactly what I had wanted to create, this sense of standing alone with everything I wanted in sight, but out of reach. It was, without a doubt, the best painting I had ever done. My mother would be proud of this. She would be proud of me. I sighed and rubbed an errant tear from my eye. Pouring my heart onto the paper so completely helped ease some of the ache I felt, but at the same time the sight of myself standing alone and longing for what I could not have pierced my heart, and I cried. I did not cry much. I was quite skilled at burying grief and binding up wounds in my heart, but I did cry a little. Afterward, I felt more capable of controlling my heart. It did not protest so loudly when I told it to behave. This is what I told my heart. Philip belongs to Cecily. He can no longer be your friend, your riding companion, your confidant. He can no longer be the highlight of your day. He must be nothing more than an acquaintance, and you must make the change before Cecily arrives. You must sever your friendship, push him away. It will be for the best, and you must not ever cry over him. My heart would obey me, I was certain. I simply needed to be strict with it. Once the paints dried, and my tears as well, I packed everything into the satchel, found a stump to stand on in order to mount Meg, and rode back to the stable. I had not kept track of the time, so it surprised me to see that the sun looked close to setting. The thought crossed my mind that I should not have stayed out so long by myself. I had missed tea, and my stomach growled at the realization. I dismounted in the stable yard and led Meg into the dim light of the stable, nearly bumping into Philip before I saw him.
"Where have you been, you little truant?" he asked.
I had not expected to run into him. I reminded myself of the decision to be nothing but an acquaintance to Philip. Now was as good a time as any to start. I smiled and tried to make my tone light. "You remind me very much of my last governess. Are you going somewhere?"
"Yes, I was going to look for you."
His voice was more curt than I had ever heard it. I sensed that I did not want to know the reason for his tone. This effort to sever our friendship was more difficult than I expected. I had to force myself to sound cool and unaffected. "Oh, well, here I am." I led Meg into her stall and started to unbuckle the saddle, hoping Philip would leave me alone. My control was already shaken, my hands trembling from our unexpected encounter. Philip followed me and reached for the buckle at the same time I did. He grabbed my hand and pulled me around to face him. My heart escaped all its bounds and took off at a gallop. Philip's face was half hidden with shadows. I couldn't read his eyes, but his mouth was grim.
"You left with Meg hours ago, without telling me or anyone else where you were going. What if something had happened to you?
What if you had been hurt? How would I have found you?
I looked at my shoes, feeling sullen and guilty at the same time.
I'm sorry.
He waited, as if expecting me to say more. But I said nothing, hoping my silence would end this here and now. When he spoke again, his voice was still hard with frustration.
Marianne, you may not think much about the fact that I am responsible for you, for your safety and welfare, but I assure you, I think about it every day. How could I face your father if something happened to you while you were living under my protection?
So, he thought of me as a responsibility. Did that also make me a burden? I hated the very thought.
I didn't think about that, I muttered.
Do you know what I've been thinking about?
I looked up and shook my head, dread falling through me. I had never seen him so upset. He took a breath.
I have been wondering if you had suffered the same fate as your mother.
I flinched at his words, feeling as if I had been struck, and yanked my hand out of his grip. There is no need to use that against me, Philip. I said I was sorry.
I had spoken too harshly. He reeled back. I stared at the ground, feeling a dangerous swell of emotion and a prick in my eyes that warned of more tears to come. The silence was thick between us. I swallowed and tried to find control of myself again. In a much quieter voice, I said, "I lost track of time, but I honestly didn't think anyone would worry about me."
"Anyone?"
I looked up. Anger flashed in Philip's eyes. My apology had only made things worse. He stepped closer to me.
"Not anyone, Marianne. I said I was worried about you. Is that significant at all to you?"
He was looking at me, really looking, as if searching for something very important. There was no hint of teasing in him, no playful flirting. I wasn't used to seeing this side of Philip. I had seen much of his light-heartedness, but not this intensity that made me feel as if there was a fire burning between us. I shrugged, knowing it solved nothing, but not knowing what else to do. He looked down and scuffed his boot against the floor, moving back a step, then forward again. I watched these signs of unrest with growing alarm. I had never seen him so uncollected.
"Marianne,"
he finally said, his voice thrumming low and hushed. He looked up, and his blue eyes sparked with intensity even in the low light.
"Do you care for me?"
Something jumped inside of me.
"What?" "You heard me."
His voice was still quiet, but strong and unbending. His eyes would not allow me to escape.
"Do you care for me? Do you care about my feelings?"
His words flew at my heart and scattered its rhythm wildly. I looked away. "Say no," I told myself. "Say no." It would be quick and easy. It would accomplish exactly what I needed to have happen. But my heart would not allow me to speak, no matter how I struggled to form the words. Had he just moved closer? How small was this stall? Too small, definitely too small, because for some reason Philip felt the need to rest his left hand on the wall above my shoulder, trapping me too close to him. I took a half step backward, my back pressing against the wall. This stall was much too warm, and Philip was much too close. Without thinking, I put my hand on his chest, meaning to push him away. But as soon as I touched him, I froze. All I could do was watch my hand rise and fall with his breathing, while my heart evaded all of my attempts to corral it. I had to push him away. Now. I put my other hand on his chest, hoping it would give me the strength I needed. But that made it even worse. My thoughts scattered with the currents of emotion that raced through me. He was waiting for my answer, but it was an impossible question. As impossible as the question he had posed to me my first night here, about whether or not this was normal. I had to cut these ties of significance between us before Cecily arrived.
Cecily was my sister, my twin, my other half. She was the sun to my moon. She was the only one left in my family who still cared about me, who still wanted me. I could not betray her. I would not betray her. I stared at the buttons on his coat and took a shaky breath. Yes, of course I care about your feelings, Philip. You have been a good friend to me and a generous host. He held perfectly still.
Look at me, Marianne,
he said in a quiet voice. I raised my eyes to his cravat, but no further.
My face, please,
he said with a sigh of exasperation. But I couldn't. There was too much between us in this moment, and it terrified me. Philip raised a hand to my face and lightly slipped his fingers under my chin and nudged it up. I had to tip my head back to look at him. His fingers brushed my jaw, my blushing cheek. My heart threatened to jump out of my chest, and there was a fire spreading through me, threatening to consume me as well as my good intentions.
A good friend?
He asked, when I was finally looking into his eyes. And a generous host? Is that all? His voice was husky and caused a thread of ache to pull through me. Without warning, I was trapped in Philip's gaze. He was so close, almost close enough for me to find that great, important, beautiful truth he was hiding. It took all of my concentration to persuade myself not to slide my hands up his chest, over his shoulders, around his neck, not to curl my fingers into his hair, not to pull his head down to mine. Good heavens, what was wrong with me? Philip was a friend and nothing more. So why was that suddenly so difficult to believe? Why was it so much easier to believe I was falling into that something I had sensed on that rainy day in the library?
Chapter 15.
I took a deep breath, trying to clear my mind. I could not fall for Philip's tricks. Never mind that so many other ladies had. Never mind that it felt inevitable. My loyalty to my sister was more important than the pull I felt. Yes, that is all. I forced myself to look into his eyes as I said the words, so he would believe that I meant them. Something dark flickered in his eyes, and then he looked up above my head. I sensed a great struggle within him, and watched as a muscle jumped in his clenched jaw. He finally lifted his hand from my chin and pushed away from the wall. My hands fell away from his chest as he stepped back a pace. Even though I had refused to succumb to the emotion I felt, I couldn't help but notice how handsome he looked with his cheeks ruddy and his eyes burning. And when he raked his hand through his hair, I couldn't help but follow the movement with my eyes, wondering what it could possibly feel like to bury my fingers in his hair.
Very well, he said in a quiet but rough voice. If you care about me at all, as a friend, or even as just your host, then don't run off like that again. Don't make me worry needlessly.
I won't, I said in a shaky voice. I promise. I had to turn away. My gaze rested on Meg. I had come in here to do something with her, but now I couldn't think what. The stall was too close and too warm, and Philip was too...
Philip. I'll have a groom take care of her, he said. His voice was strained, but gentle.
He picked up my satchel and gestured for me to precede him out of the stall. The setting sun cast golden paths between the trees, leaving much of the area cooling in shade and the blue-gray light of oncoming dusk. When we emerged from the stable, I pulled in a deep breath of fresh air. This was better. Open spaces and fresh air should clear my head and my heart. It should clear the thick emotions between Philip and me. But I sensed something deep and taut connecting us. It made our silence feel uncomfortable, and I wasn't used to that with him. I was used to comfort and familiarity, not tension and awkwardness. I wondered if everything between us was really so fragile that it could be ruined in just one day. As much as I had lectured my heart about the need to destroy my friendship with Philip, I panicked at the thought that it might have already happened. I wasn't ready. My heart had not been schooled enough to accept it. And Cecily wasn't here yet. I peeked up at Philip and found him looking down at me with a thoughtful expression.
"What did you do today?" he asked.
"Oh, I just painted," I said. "What did you do?"
"Absolutely nothing. I sat in my library and thought about you all day."
When I looked up at him in surprise, he winked. I was so relieved, I laughed. He was flirting with me, just like he had always done. Nothing had to change, not yet. Once Cecily arrived, I could cut him out of my heart. But for right now, I would enjoy this moment.
"You did not," I said, because that was how we played our game.
"That's what you get for trying to change the subject. May I see what you painted?"
When I hesitated, he smiled at me in the way I found impossible to resist.
"Please, I want to see what was worth making me worry about you."
I glared at him. "That's a low trick."
"Yes, but effective, I think,"
he said, stopping and turning to me. Philip was nothing if not persistent. Sighing with defeat, I took the satchel from him and pulled out the painting. I handed it to him hesitantly, anxious about his reaction. I watched his face carefully and was not disappointed. His immediate reaction was a mixture of surprise and appreciation. The expression that followed defied definition. I couldn't find a word for the emotion I saw in his eyes when he looked at me.
"I'm afraid I can't give this back to you."
I smiled. "What a nice compliment. Thank you." I reached to take the watercolor back from him, but he stepped away from me.
"I am in earnest. What do you want for it?"
I was sure he was teasing. "It's not for sale." I moved to take it from him, and he hid it behind his back with a grin, clearly enjoying our new game. I regarded him thoughtfully. I considered trying to wrench the painting from him, but decided I would probably be unsuccessful in the attempt. He smiled smugly at me.
Now I had to try.
I reached around him, but he snared me quickly around the waist with one arm while he held the painting safely behind his back with his other hand. I was taken off guard by his unexpected touch and the warmth of his body against mine. I stepped away quickly, and he released me.
"You didn't really think that would work, did you?" he asked with a smile.
"No, but I thought it was worth a try."
"Yes, it was definitely worth that," he said with a rakish grin that made me blush.
"Would you consider a trade?"
His question sparked my curiosity. "What kind of a trade?"
"That's up to you. What do you want?"
There was nothing suggestive in his voice, but in his eyes I saw a host of possibilities. My face flushed hot, and I found myself suddenly tongue-tied.
Wicked flirt!
"I can tell by your blush that you're too shy to ask for it," he said.
"Would it help if I guessed?
I would know the right answer by the shade of red on your cheeks."
It was impossible not to laugh.
"You're atrocious!"
I held out my hand for the painting, but he shook his head, clearly not ready to give up the fight.
"What about Meg?"
he asked. I was startled.
"I couldn't take Meg."
"Why not?"
"It's a horse, Philip. That's why not. She's far more valuable than that painting."
"Not to me."
I shook my head. "It's absurd. I couldn't do it."
"Something else, then."
"Why do you want it so badly?" I asked.
"Don't ask me that. Just tell me what your price is."
He said it with a smile, but there was an unmistakable glint of determination in his eyes. I sighed, knowing Philip was relentless once he set his mind on something. "There are only two things that I really want, but you can't give me either of them, so there's no sense in telling you." I held out my hand again. Philip ignored my hand.
"I want to know."
The teasing was gone, replaced with utter determination.
Very well, I said, knowing it would make no difference in our battle. I want my father to come home, and I want the locket the highwaymen took. It had a picture of my mother in it. I saw a flash of sadness in Philip's eyes. It made my heart ache. See, you can't give me either of those things, so I must insist on keeping the painting. He studied me in silence for a moment, then looked back at the watercolor. I felt suddenly transparent, as if he was looking at the deep recesses of my heart, and I cringed inside with the sense of vulnerability it gave me.
It appears we are at an impasse then, because I cannot give this up.
He looked at me with a speculative gaze.
I have an idea. Let's keep it somewhere we can both enjoy it until we've agreed on a price.
The library, I guessed. I sighed at the smile Philip gave me. Very well. But if we can't agree on a price before I leave, then I will take it with me, and you will have to let it go without a fight.
Agreed,
he said with a smile that told me he thought he was going to win. But this was one contest he would not win, for I had painted my heart into that picture, and I would not let him have it. The following morning was very much the same as every other morning I had spent at Edenbrook. I once again met Philip at the stables for our early morning ride. Once again his horse beat mine in a race, and once again we talked and laughed as we walked back to the house together. But through it all, I sensed that everything we did was not part of an ongoing routine, but the final act in a play that would conclude this afternoon. Cecily was expected to arrive today, along with Louisa and William and Rachel, and nothing would be the same again. A sense of melancholy stole over me as I changed out of my riding habit, so I stayed in my room instead of going down for breakfast and tried to find solace in my drawing. While sketching the prospect from my window, I attempted to convince my heart that there was no need to grieve over losing something I had enjoyed for only a week. It was only a morning ride with a friend, and nothing more. But my heart had become more difficult to deceive lately, and accused me of being a liar. I frowned at my sketch. Surely my heart was inferior to my mind and will. I would simply have to exercise more control over it. It had learned to obey me after greater losses than this. It would obey me again. A knock at the door interrupted my thoughts. A servant had come up to inform me that I had a visitor. Taken off guard, I quickly smoothed my hair before following him downstairs. Who could be calling on me? I paused in the doorway of the drawing room, surprised to find Philip there. He was supposed to be meeting with his steward. I was also surprised by the swift look Lady Caroline sent me, as if she were trying to guess my feelings with a glance. But most of all, I was surprised to discover that my visitor was a stranger to me. He had golden blonde hair, done in the Brummel style. His collar points reached all the way to his cheekbones. His waistcoat was daring but tasteful, and I counted 3 fobs. He carried himself with an air of confidence and a flair for fashion that impressed me. The gentleman bowed elegantly.
Miss Daventry?
Yes. What can I do for you, Mr.
Beaufort, Thomas Beaufort?
I sat next to Lady Caroline, and Mr. Beaufort sat across from me. Philip stood behind him, close to the window. Mr. Beaufort held a book in his hand, which he handed to me.
Please forgive me for being so forward as to call on you without introduction, but I was commissioned to bring this to you, and I was told it was of the utmost importance that you receive it.
I opened the book with great curiosity. My eyes skimmed over the lines. Miss Daventry is fair and true, with eyes of such a beautiful hue. I promptly snapped the book shut again. It was a collection of Mr. Whittle's poems. Mr. Beaufort smiled.
My uncle, Mr. Whittles, charged me with the task of presenting this collection of poems, which he has dedicated to you.
This must be the nephew Mr. Whittles had mentioned on the morning I left Bath. I see, I said, clearing my throat with embarrassment.
Did he think I welcomed his uncle's attentions? How mortifying!
Thank you, sir. I hope you have not travelled out of your way to deliver this.
No, not far. But distance would not have deterred me. I confess, I have been eager to meet the object of such rapture.
He waved his hand in the air as if gesturing to unseen angels. I felt my face grow hotter. I wished Philip wasn't hearing this. He had turned his gaze to me with something of amusement and curiosity in it. He would undoubtedly tease me about all this later.
"I am sorry you had to be subjected to his poetry," I said to Mr. Beaufort. "I tried to stop him, but it was impossible." He laughed. It was a pleasant sound.
"I can well believe it, but I can hardly blame his taste, even if his poetry is not the finest."
Admiration gleamed in his eyes. My blush refused to disappear, and I cursed my inability to feel comfortable with handsome young gentlemen. For this gentleman was handsome, although in a different way from Philip. This was the sort of gentleman Cecily probably met every day in London. This was the sort of gentleman my grandmother would want me to feel comfortable with and to learn to flirt with. Mr. Beaufort leaned toward me.
"Tell me, Miss Daventry, do you plan to attend the ball at the Assembly Rooms this Friday evening?"
I glanced at Lady Caroline, who nodded slightly.
"Yes, I believe we had planned on it," I said.
He smiled suavely.
"And do you dance as prettily as you blush?"
My gaze darted to Philip. It sounded just like the sort of complimentary thing he would say. I thought he might appreciate Mr. Beaufort's phrasing, but his eyes were narrowed and his mouth was set in a firm line. He clearly did not appreciate Mr. Beaufort. But did Philip really think he was the only man who was allowed to flirt with me? I smiled back at Mr. Beaufort, feeling defiant for a reason I couldn't explain.
"Not quite, but much more willingly."
Mr. Beaufort laughed as if I said something very clever. My smile grew as I realized I had just flirted for the first time in my life. It was a heady experience, and not one altogether unpleasant.
"Then may I have the honour of the first two dances with you?" he asked.
I nearly looked at Philip again, but stopped myself, realizing that he had not asked me for any dances, so it should not matter to him what I answered.
"Yes, you may," I said to Mr. Beaufort, feeling powerful. "A handsome young gentleman wanted to dance with me. Not Cecily, but me."
Mr. Beaufort smiled in return, then stood and apologized for not being able to stay longer.
"I will look forward to Friday night, then,"
he said, leaving us with a bow. Lady Caroline looked at me, then at Philip, who was still looking unappreciative as he glowered out the window at Mr. Beaufort's retreating figure. Lady Caroline abruptly stood.
"Well, if you will excuse me, I have something to do."
She hurried out of the room and shut the door firmly behind her. I only vaguely noticed her departure. Smoothing my hand over the leather cover of my book of poems, I smiled to myself. Was this how Cecily felt when she talked to gentlemen? Did she feel this strong and powerful? I could not blame her for being a flirt now that I had experienced the effect of it myself. I glanced up when Philip came away from the window and sat next to me on the settee. He held out his hand.
"May I?"
I handed him the book, which he opened to the first page. Philip cleared his throat and read the first poem out loud. I was amazed that his voice, rich and familiar, could make even Mr. Whittle's poems sound almost good. I wondered what he could do with a well-written poem. My urge to smile disappeared. My feeling of power deserted me. In its absence, I felt deflated, and the lachrymose mood I had been trying to fight off earlier returned. Philip turned the page and read another poem. Gazing at his familiar profile, I thought of the orchard littered with bruised apples. I thought of Miss Grace's insinuations about my motives for coming here. I thought about how Cecily had danced with Philip and had fallen in love with him in London. I wondered how many hearts he had collected and how many he had broken. He glanced